12. The building housing the Senate of the Hegemony of Man was patterned more after the United States Senate building of 8 centuries earlier, rather than the more imperial structures of the North American Republic or the First World Council. The main assembly room was large, girded with galleries, and big enough for the 300-plus senators from Web Worlds and the more than 70 non-voting representatives from protectorate colonies. Carpets were a rich wine red and radiated from the central dais where the president pro tem, the speaker of the All-Thing, and, today, the chief executive officer of the Hegemony had their seats. Senators' desks were made of muir wood, donated by the Templars of God's Grove, who held such products sacred, and the glow and scent of burnished wood filled the room even when it was as crowded as it was today. Lee Hunt and I entered just as Gladstone was finishing her speech. I keyed my comm log for a quick readout. As with most of her talks, it had been short, comparatively simple, without condescension or bombast, yet laced with a certain lilt of original phrasing and imagery which carried great power. Gladstone had reviewed the incidents and conflicts that led to the current state of belligerency with the ousters, proclaimed the time-honored wish for peace, which still was paramount in hegemony policy, and called for unity within the web and protectorate until this current crisis was past. I listened to her summation. And so it has come to pass, fellow citizens, that after more than a century of peace, we are once again engaged in a struggle to maintain those rights to which our society has been dedicated since before the death of our Mother Earth. After more than a century of peace, we must now pick up, however unwillingly, however distastefully, the shield and sword which have ever preserved our birthright and vouchsafed our common good so that peace may again prevail. We must not, and shall not, be misled by the stir of trumpets or the rush of near joy which the call to arms inevitably produces. Those who ignore history's lessons in the ultimate folly of war are forced to do more than relive them. They may be forced to die by them. Great sacrifices may lay ahead for all of us. Great sorrows may lay in store for some of us. But come what successes or setbacks must inevitably occur, I say to you now that we must remember these two things above all. First, that we fight for peace, and know that war must never be a condition, but rather a temporary scourge which we suffer as a child does a fever, knowing that health follows the long night of pain and that peace is health. Second, that we shall never surrender. Never surrender or waver or bend to lesser voices or more comfortable impulses. Never waver until the victory is ours, aggression is undone, and the peace is won. I thank you. Lee Hunt leaned forward and watched intently as most of the senators rose to give Gladstone an ovation that roared back from the high ceiling and struck us in the gallery in waves. Most of the senators. I could see Hunt counting those who remained sitting, some with arms folded, many with visible frowns. The war was less than 2 days old, and already the opposition was building. First from the colonial worlds afraid for their own safety, while force was diverted to Hyperion. Then from Gladstone's opponents, of which there were many, since no one stays in power as long as she without creating cadres of enemies. And finally, from members of her own coalition, who saw the war as a foolish undoing of unprecedented prosperity. I watched her leaving the dais, shaking hands with the aged president and young speaker, then taking the center aisle out, touching and talking to many, smiling the familiar smile. All-thing imagers followed her, and I could feel the pressure of the debate net swell as billions voiced their opinions on the interact levels of the megasphere.
I need to see her now, said Hunt. Are you aware that you're invited to a state dinner tonight at Treetops?
Yes. Hunt shook his head slightly, as if incapable of understanding why the CEO wanted me around.
It will run late and will be followed by a meeting with Force Command. She wants you to attend both.
I'll be available, I said. Hunt paused at the door.
Do you have something to do back at Government House until the dinner?
I smiled at him. I'll work on my portrait sketches, I said. Then I'll probably take a walk through Deer Park. After that, I don't know, I may take a nap. Hunt shook his head again and hurried off.